joint hearing of the Senate Resources and Energy Committees, and today's date is September 1st, 2009. And my name is Bill Walikowski, and joining us are Senator Ellis, co-chair of the Resources Committee and chair of the Energy Committee, Senator McGuire, Senate President Senator Stevens, your senator, and thank you for your hospitality, Senator Stevens, and also Senator French. We have several others joining us. I want to thank everyone for coming out today. We got our flight was delayed this morning, so we got off to a little late start. We've been to Kodiak Electric. We had a great tour there, and we went up to the wind farm. We also went out to the Alaska Aerospace, and I had a great tour out there. And the hospitality has been fantastic. And the purpose of our visit is to come out and hear from the people of Kodiak and find out what your ideas are for how we can have a state for a statewide energy plan. I think a lot of what you're doing down here is really a model for maybe what a lot of us can do in other parts of Alaska. With you're using renewable energy, your wind energy, your hydro energy, it's really, I think, a model for the rest of the state. But if you have ideas on things that we can do, we're here to listen to you, to get ideas from you, and hear creative ways that we can solve Alaska's problems. So with that, I'll start the hearing, and I'd like to call the mayor first, Mr. Selby, if you could come up. And we have quite a few people signed up to testify. No more will come in. If you're interested in testifying, would you please sign a sheet in the back? And I'll try to be a little flexible, but if you could limit your testimony to 5 minutes, that'd be great, because we do have a lot of people to testify. We have a commitment for 7 o'clock, but we'll try to get everyone in and hear what you have to say. So thank you, Mr. Selby. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, and thank you for coming, Kodiak. We appreciate you folks taking the time to come down here. We appreciate that greatly, and especially the chance to see me for the community to give you their thoughts as well. Lots of great ideas here in Kodiak. So I do, on behalf of the Kodiak On Board, I'd like to welcome you all here officially and hope you enjoy your stay here and get the most out of the visit that you can get. You already know mostly what's going on, and so we hope there's some things here that might be of use to you folks as you're looking at what might be duplicated or replicated or changed a little bit. We're kind of excited that you're looking not only here at Kodiak, but what can be done in a village like Yuzinki as well with the same kind of combination of hydro, wind, and diesel that we're using here in Kodiak. So that's kind of exciting that it's not just for larger communities necessarily. Some of the smaller communities in the state could benefit from a similar kind of arrangement, we think. So we applaud you for taking a look at that. Hope you can figure out ways to do this effectively across the state. We're kind of keeping an eye out, and I suppose you folks are kind of checking on it as well, of what might happen with tidal generation. That's kind of the other thing that we're thinking here on the island might be really beneficial, because if folks that are working on that can figure out how to do that, we have some pretty big tide differences, and Whale Pass over there has about a 5 or 6 knot current in it going during the tide runs and whatnot, and you would think you could generate some pretty serious energy from that sort of thing, and that's a lot of coastal Alaska, I know, shares that, so maybe the next thing in the future, after wind and some of these things that are going on right now, there might be some opportunity there as well. We do have some good things going on here. We do need some help, though, and I wanted to just mention that. One of the things that I would encourage you folks to look at would be helping to retrofit public facilities with updated equipment. Our case in point is a 40-year-old high school over here with boilers that are 40 years old, and we know they're not anywhere near as efficient as the modern ones that they make, but coming up with the money to replace all the boilers in the high school and in this building as well, in public buildings, is a little bit daunting in terms of the costs. But we would think that our view is that that would be kind of another piece of improving energy use and efficiency in the state of Alaska, is not only the generation side, but how can we get more efficient equipment and maybe bring down the costs and the amount that we use on the use side as well. So, you know, more generation from renewables, bring down how much we have to use. The combination of that, I think somewhere in there lies the best formula for Alaska, not only for Kodiak, but for statewide as well. So we would ask and encourage you to see if you can come up with some sort of a program where we could start chipping away at some of this backlog across the state of public facilities that need to have equipment upgraded to modern, much more fuel efficient or energy efficient, whether it's electricity or diesel fuel or whatever. That helps bring the cost down too. And so it's that combination, I think, is wherein lies the real solution for us, for the state, for the future. So, again, I applaud you for coming to Kodiak, for you guys looking at this issue. I think the $100-plus dollar barrel oil kind of got it up on the forefront of everybody's attention here in the last year or so. So please keep up the great work, and if there's anything we can do to help, let us know. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mayor. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, and I'd like to welcome Senators Wagner, Senator Hoffman, Senator Stedman, and Senator Thomas to the hearing. And thank you for your testimony, Mayor. Appreciate it. Good suggestions. Next up, we have Carolyn Floyd.
City Mayor. Don't think she can't
thank
talk.
Thank you, Gary. I saw Tom come in, and I thought, uh-oh. There's trouble on the line.
Hi,
Carol. Tears are going to fall. How are you doing, Tom?
Great.
I'd like to welcome you all to this meeting. I didn't prepare any long five-minute speech for it, other than we hope that you are looking at the ways to decrease the cost of energy that is being utilized in our communities. We know that we have the wind power. We have partial wind power now, and you were up on Pillar Mountain, and you saw that. And then the hydro, of course. And like Jerome said, the tidal, I just put down water because we have lots of water here. And if that could be perfected sometime in the future, that would be another source of energy that we could really utilize. And, of course, the gas, I understand, over on the peninsula is kind of in short supply. They have the gas, but they can't get to it or something like that. I heard on the news. Gary, what did they say? He just shakes his head. Okay. But we do welcome you here and hope that you have learned a lot about our community and about the needs that we have. And, of course, all of these, whatever the project is, it requires money. And so show us the money, okay? Thank you for coming today, and we hope that you will learn a lot. And we're going to, being a teacher, I'm here to listen to what you have to say, too. So we'll all ask questions, but we want answers, okay? Thank you.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none. Next up is Maggie Wall.
Hi, my name is Maggie Wall, and we already know Senator Stevens, but I'd like to welcome all you other senators here to Kodiak. We appreciate your coming. I just wanted to say a few things. I am a reporter. I do a radio show about the legislature and getting involved in the public process and doing things, and I wanted to thank you all for coming here to Kodiak and for all these other places around the state where you have been, because I think it's important, one, that people who are making decisions in this state get out to different places and see what it's like in different communities, and also that the people in the communities get a chance to see the lawmakers and realize that you're people. You're just regular people like the rest of us. I have a program called the Ledgehead Report that is on several radio stations, and one of the things I am very strong about is I worked in the legislature many years ago, and I was always struck by how willing legislators are to hear what people have to say. You want to know what people have to say, and people don't need to be afraid to be getting up and doing things. And so what I try to do is to encourage people to learn how it works and to explain how it works, because it can be very daunting and confusing, the process. And I just think it's wonderful that you all have come here and that you've gone to other places and that you're letting us all of us here, be involved in the process. And I just wanted to thank you for that, and I'll encourage other people to get up and talk as well, because I know that you guys really do read your emails and you really do read those public opinion messages. And I'll encourage people to get involved in this important issue of how are we going to save energy? How are we going to make the state work better? And that's all I had to say, and I just wanted to thank you again for coming, and not only here, but those other places that you have gone.
Thank you, Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we have Elaine O'Brien, followed by Donna Jones. So, Elaine. And if you haven't signed up and you're interested in testifying, we have a sign-up sheet in the back. Or actually, and Michelle has one.
Many of you would probably know me as Lainey Welch from the writing and radio reports that I've done around the state for 23 years, but today I'm speaking just as a Alaskan Kodiak resident, Elaine O'Brien. I'm so nervous, gosh. briefly, I want to urge you to keep a close, really reconsider the Chewitna coal strip mine near in Upakook Inlet. This is a project by Pacrim Coal, Delaware Corporation, that would take 1 billion tons of coal from this area, and it includes 22 square miles of fish habitat. I'm not going to talk about the infrastructure, like the 12 or stress. I'm not going to stress the 12 mile long, partially enclosed conveyor belt from the mine that will transport the coal onto massive 2-mile-long docks that will jet into Cook Inlet on these Cape-class vessels that will then go by Kodiak. But also the fact that this could set a precedent as far as taking traditional salmon set net sites by eminent domain. What I want to talk about mostly is that every bit of this coal, which is the most, I can't believe how nervous I am, sorry, the largest source of greenhouse gases, every bit of it is going to Asia. It'll be burned in Asia, come back in the form of CO2, which will be dumped into the Pacific Ocean. The chemistry doesn't lie. The cold waters of the Bering Sea and the Pacific and our waters are already showing, the creatures are showing the signs of ocean acidification. And we would be getting back this trade-off in Upper Cook Inlet for this strip coal mine in methylmercury in our waters. And I have information on that for you. Secondly, I would like you to really look into the possibilities posed by algae biofuels. This is a really exciting technology, and they're finding, I have a fish radio program script here where I talked about it, they're finding that cold water algae, a big project is going on Cape Cod, just like anyone else in the cold, you retain the fat and produce more oil. And Exxon has reportedly invested $600 million in biofuels using algae. And the cold water algae, I've learned in research, is that algae can be turned into biofuel in just 3 weeks compared to 6 months for vegetable oils. And also, algae biodiesel has a composition that is almost identical to petroleum diesel, but is more efficient and produces lower emissions. And these facilities could be operated in the remotest regions of Alaska. And then thirdly, this might sound trivial, but it's one of my little pet projects. I'd like to make you aware of the right to dry movement. Everybody talks about ways in which to save energy and what we can all do in our own homes, but we always seem to look to big government or, you know, or industry to make the choices for us. But interestingly, if Americans line dried their clothes for just half a year, it would save 3.3% of the U.S. output of carbon dioxide. The reason I bring this to your attention is because since the 1970s, clotheslines have been banned by development restrictions in most of the United States. According to Project Laundry List, 60 million people live in 300,000 association-governed communities nationwide, most of which restrict outdoor drying. Condominium and homeowners groups say they have the right to ban practices that drag down property values, and clotheslines top the list. So again, I mean, I know sometimes it's not possible or practical,
but just keep in mind that today's kids, we have two generations of kids who don't even know the smell of line dried laundry. I also have DVDs that I help co-produce with other people here in my community, Dave Kaplan, who's one of our borough assembly members, about turning fish byproducts into other products. I mean, everything from high heel shoes to salmon bikinis. But in our own town, we're turning it into fish meal and oils, and actually even using some of the fuel to fire the reduction plant that we have here in town. So that's another thing Kodiak is doing. So I'm giving you each one of these, and I'm passing over these materials. And thank you so much for coming to our community.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. If you could hold on 1 second, we have a couple questions here from Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Lainey, for your comments. And I can understand your concerns about coal and carbon production and the difficulty of that. But what about the impact on fisheries? And that, since that is your expertise, are you concerned about this particular coal mine and the impact it may have on fish streams?
Well, you know, I see the difficulty people in Seward are having with the amount of coal dust. So I can't imagine that if you're talking about a 12-mile-long, partially covered conveyor belt, when you ask PacRim, you know, what are you going to do to keep the coal dust down, they say spray it with water. Well, you know, it could be frozen in October. So I worry about the impacts of smothering coal dust on streams and, you know, not just for fish, but for any of all of us living creatures. But like Jerome said, when you look at Cook Inlet, the biggest tides in the world, my gosh, why are people looking into this, you know, known culprit of global warming causation, when there could be tides and geothermal and, you know, just the wind and the sun? It just makes sense.
Thank you. And yeah. We've got another question, Senator Wagner.
One slight correction on your last statement. Cook Inlet doesn't have the biggest tides in the world. Matter of fact, they're third or fourth. But
is it Bay of Fundy?
Yeah, and there's some other areas down in Chile and some other places.
Ah.
But going back to your statement about exporting coal and exporting it into China and then burning it, do you realize that this is one of the lower sulfur coals as far as generation of sulfur there is in the world? So every ton that we would put into that market would replace or displace a high sulfur content of coal. So would that make any difference in your opinion?
No, it would make no difference whatsoever.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Right.
Great. Thank you. Thank you again.
Thanks.
And if you could leave those, if you have things, leave them with Michelle, please. Great.
Get out. Thanks.
Okay. And next up we have Donna Jones, followed by Rod Murdoch.
Good evening. I'm Donna Jones. I'm a member of Sustainable Kodiak, which is a loose coalition of a whole lot of different community groups, individuals from all kinds of different interested in trails, interested in electricity, interested in all sorts of things. I'm not an expert testifier, but I'm a person who tries to walk this walk. So my thoughts on energy in Alaska is that if you want to increase energy for Alaska, the no-brainer is that conservation comes first. That's the easiest and cheapest way to generate electricity and to grow electricity here. And it's also really clean. You don't have to dig up anything. So I would like to recommend expanding the current energy rebate program for homes and to extend it to nonprofits, to schools and other public buildings, and to businesses, including apartment buildings, which are a major source of inefficient energy use. Alaska already has a really fine cooperative extension and Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation infrastructure and database and knowledge base to support these programs, to educate people, and to run this program. So this is a really cheap way to do it. I also suggest that we should mandate higher energy efficiency standards in residential and in commercial construction. State and borough buildings should be built to efficient green building standards. There's a lot of work that's been done in this area, and they're not only really efficient, they're also pretty. Super insulation is a really good choice, especially for some of those remote villages where they're having to fly in oil. That's crazy. And it's also expensive and a hardship on those people. It would pay off many times by permanently reducing these oil costs. I'd like to suggest doing a matching fund for the upcoming federal energy-saving appliance rebate. They're going to, this fall, the federal government's going to have a program rebating between $50 and $200 for Energy Star efficient, you know, refrigerators and washing machines and that kind of stuff. And I know that you all are considering some of that already, but you might consider adding an Alaska state rebate to that or matching funds or something like that. And I also would suggest a small rebate program for those people who can't do their whole house. I just did my whole house with that energy rebate program. We went up six steps to five-star plus, but it took a year, and it was tremendous. I mean, it just seemed to go on and on. Nonetheless, it's done. But what I'd like to suggest is that you have small rebates for things like LED or CFL light bulbs, for weatherization materials, weather stripping, stuff like that, and insulation products like spray foam or fiberglass, things like that. For people who can't do this whole thing that's going to cost $20,000, they're going to get 10 back. If you had just a small one, people would get started. And once people get started, it's like eating cookies. They don't want to stop because they start to see that they're saving money. And so I suggest a small cookie rebate. In another vein, I'd like to strongly speak about protecting Alaskan farm and ranch land. Now, that might seem like it's out of the picture of energy, but this land, once it's developed, it's almost impossible to get it back. Alaska's at the end of the supply chain in the United States. We're really far away. And we need to keep all this food-growing farmland available now and later for local food production. It's important because as oil prices go up and as oil becomes somewhat scarcer in the world, the price of shipping is going to just skyrocket for these kinds of foods. It's also a good industry for Alaska. Lastly, I want to encourage walkable mixed-use neighborhoods. This comes out in a lot of different ways, but one of them is trails. So those are my thoughts. You might say, you know, everyone here has talked about how do we pay for this? You know, how do we pay for giving the borough money to retrofit its buildings and stuff like that? Recently, we had Rich Seifert from UAF, was called usually the energy guy. And after he, Sustainable Kodiak invited him here to talk, the write-up was on the front page of the paper. And I've got a few copies of that for you to read. I won't read it now. But what he suggested was that we could look in the future at using some of the permanent fund money to make some permanent energy changes in our state. Not a whole lot, but to use some of that money to make some infrastructure changes. We got that money from energy. Alaskan oil is depleting at this point. Let's make some plans for the future. This would not be an unreasonable use of this money. So I'm not going to say more than that. You can read the article, and you can talk to him, too. But I just want to thank you for coming. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Donna. And you can leave those copies with Michelle. We'll be sure to get those to the members. Next up, we have Rod Murdoch, followed by Darren Scott.
Hello, my name is Rod Murdoch. I own Alpha Appliance here in Kodiak, and I'd like to welcome you to our community. I've been in Kodiak 20 years, and I'm the fix-it guy here. And Senator Stevens, I've been in his house numerous occasions and fixed his appliances on those occasions. And
thank God for Rod.
Anyway, I'm here to report that over the last 2-year period, I've been playing with some new gadgetry, and I'm happy to report that I've been able to cut my heating cost better than half, and a number of customers that I've put in heat pumps around Kodiak have reported the same findings, that I have a fellow out in Passagshack that has cut his heating cost in half, and we're exploring that, and it's basically to do with heat pumps. We had a fellow show up a week or two ago that Mike Brecken brought to town from Climate Masters, which is a geothermal installer from Idaho, and kind of concluded that geothermal is really the way to go. And I considered that air source heat pumps, which is the direction I chose because of our mild climate here in Kodiak, our average winter temperature is 25 degrees Fahrenheit. And after a number of considerations and explorations with the internet and the huge amount of information that people are willing to share on the internet, I concluded that I could buy off-the-shelf gadgets from European and American manufacturers, install them, and realize an immediate savings in energy. All these appliances I put in are typically only electric-driven, and amazing turn of events. So I'm really happy to report that we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I have numerous customers here in Kodiak that will testify to that very savings. In fact, we have on the horizon with Kodiak Electric Association, we're going to be putting in a test heat pump in one of their buildings in the next week or two, so we'll be able to gauge what's going on. But I think that I'm really excited for our community, and I encourage you to find out that there are off-the-shelf instruments and gadgets that we can, look and find them very easily and implement them just as easily. So I'd encourage you to follow up on that. We're sitting in the middle of an energy gold mine in Kodiak with all the tidal, the wind power and whatnot, and it's all green, it's all renewable, and these gadgets I'm talking about don't have any emissions. They don't use a drop of oil. I'm happy to report that most of my property is completely oil-free. And forgive me for being a little nervous, but I usually don't see this powerful of a group that I have to stand for. So thank you for your time, and thank you for coming to Kodiak.
Great, thank you. Quick question for you, Rod. How much is an average house cost to put a heat pump in?
Depending on the size of the house, but the typical 1,500-square-foot house, and every place is circumstantially different, the number of family members and whatnot, it's going to be cheaper, actually, to install than oil-driven equipment. And the beauty of this fellow coming to Kodiak and putting on this seminar about geothermal gave me the reassurance that my choice of air source, and of course the air source is easy to install. If you put a gizmo like that you see outside in your friends' homes that live in warm climates, and essentially a heat pump is an air conditioner is a heat pump. It takes the heat out of a building and dumps it outside. Well, a heat pump brings the heat, and there's latent heat in the air all the way down to absolute zero. And it's the technology is out there, and they've improved it to the point that it's just. But typically, it's on a par or even less expensive than heat equipment or oil heat equipment.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up is Darren Scott, followed by Stephen Telfin.
Hi, again, my name is Darren Scott with Kodiak Electric, and I want to say thanks again for coming to Kodiak, and especially thanks for taking the time earlier today to look at our wind farm up there on Pillar Mountain. And the only other point I wanted to share today was that I was asked a question earlier, didn't have time, was with the condensed schedule. Are there any thoughts, and as we went through our process, if y'all are inclined out in the future to potentially fund future renewable energy projects? We were recipients of $4 million through the Renewable Energy Fund, which was great, wonderful, and helped this project be fairly successful. But there potentially could be other ways to administer that money, and one idea potentially could be using production incentives instead of direct grants. And I think that could be very advantageous to all groups involved. One, it puts the charge on us as whoever's making the energy project to make sure that thing produces, and then it makes it an easier process, I would think, for y'all trying to figure out which projects are going to work better than others and those type of things. It would allow for us to drive forward as best we can and make the most productive project we can. But again, I want to thank y'all for y'all's support through the Renewable Energy Fund, and thank you very much for coming to Kodiak and looking at our project as well.
And thank you again for the tour and the presentation. It was excellent. Any questions for Darren? Okay, thank you. Stephen Telfin, followed by Bob Brody.
Good evening, Senators. I'm Stephen Telfin. Some of you have met me before in Juneau. I'm here representing myself, but I'd like to cover a couple of issues. Some of you may know that a partner and I tried to develop ADAC, Power and Electric, years ago, and the whole situation at ADAC was very instructive. It was instructive about the state's failures to ensure that the public-serving assets promised under base realignment and closure flowed through to the public as promised during the Knowles administration. That ended up having severe effects on the cost of electricity and the cost of fuel to fishing fleets. It was instructive about how a native corporation usurped those powers and was price gouging on fuel while not charging itself for electricity and overcharging the fishing fleet as well. All these things obviously got seriously in the way of development at ADAC. And development depends upon proper energy costs. And ADAC remains troubled to this day. You're probably aware there's new lawsuits going on there. But it's important to mention that I believe that the Knowles agreement still stands. You know, I believe the state's still obligated to make sure that public servicing assets that were under the Navy go through and serve the public to this day. It was our conceptualization at that time that fuel tanks at 25 million gallons or so there that served the Navy as a fuel station in the Pacific could have been used to serve Western Alaska, the Aleutian Islands, Bristol Bay, the AYK region, because as we discussed with people like AVEC, the Alaska Village Electrical Cooperative at that time, you know, it was possible to do more upfront engineering and collective buying and supplying, and we never saw a reason why the collective power of that amount of storage located at that place couldn't have served both the fishing industry and all those villages with proper buying of fuel at the right times on the world market. And but what really ended up being instructive about ADAC as we went through emergency declarations that were ignored and the difficulties the Regulatory Commission of the State of Alaska had policing that place is that you need to strengthen the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Only when they finally got a magistrate in place that got tough did things start to change and, again, promote greater upfront engineering like AVEC. We need to keep into consideration that as native companies own fuel operations and intend to profit on them, those advantages can have detrimental effects on our fleets and villages, as is believed to be happening here in the Gulf of Alaska. But before I close, I'd like to switch to the topic I'm best known for, which is abusive transfer pricing. That is the means by which global corporations transfer the values through their products around the world among their affiliates to cheat the United States out of the economic benefits and the taxes. And this has sorely harmed the state of Alaska, both in timber and fisheries. And obviously the oil companies have been at this game a long time. So when I hear people like Laney Welch and others express their concerns for coal, and when I hear issues like the Pebble Mine, I think that you have to really seriously keep in mind that Alaska, for all of its resource dependency, does not have, unlike several other states and commonwealths, a state resource sovereignty commission. I originally talked to a few of you back in Juneau years ago about forming a resource accountability and transparency board so we know the true value of our exploitive resources in world markets. I've since advanced that idea to the to that of a formation of a state resource sovereignty commission. I could help you learn about these kinds of things. I'm associated with people that do represent state and local interests nationwide and in global conduct of trade. And underneath such a commission, we could then have these individualized resource accountability and transparency boards. You know, we could start taking care of that problem where for 25 years and only one quarter did timber make a profit, because Mitsubishi Corporation, both in the United States and Canada and elsewhere, uses these transfer pricing techniques. Or the problem we still have in fisheries. Why does Kodiak have, and Alaska in general, have these huge ports that have a relative value of their products per pound far less than other parts of this nation, yet we're dealing with king crab, pollock roe, salmon roe, and all these fine products up here. And the explanation for that, the, you know, what we estimate, and I've estimated with IRS experts before, is nearly $2 billion a year goes away because of our failure to know those true values and police them properly. And I think it's going to apply to our energy costs, and we need to, at the very least, ensure that we get an adequate severance as under the Alaska Constitution it commands us to do for our resources. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Stephen. Appreciate your testimony. Next up, we have Bob Brody, followed by Teresa Peterson.
Thank you, Senators, for coming to Kodiak. It's a pleasure to see you. Ms. McGuire, rose amongst the thorns there. Hope you had a good ride.
Beauty and the Beast.
I think his time is up, don't you?
Senator Stevens, it's nice that you brought some of your compatriots that you've always talked about in somewhat glowing terms on occasion. If you guys would like to repay them in kind when you repair from here down to Henry's or Tony's or the village, you might ask some of the barmaids about Gary Stevens and his activities. If you dangle the little money that she mentioned in front of Mayor Floyd, she was the director of the community college, Kodiak College, where Senator Stevens purported to be a professor, and she might be able to tell you some stories about some of his antics there. For the right money to Samara Floyd in the community. Well, thank you for coming. It's always instructive, I think, for people from around Alaska to visit other parts of it and see. When I was in local government and the mayor and the Conference of Mayors took us to different places, it was very helpful and understanding to know what other communities went through. So thanks for coming over here. I would like to speak to the energy program that you had with through Alaska Housing for the energy upgrades to single-family residences, and was alluded to before. It was a huge success. The big holdup was getting the energy raters available to rate the houses, line up the contractors to do the work, and then confirm it. And I think it saved many consumers many thousands of dollars in the future on their energy costs. And I think I would suggest if the funding is available, you expand that to some apartment buildings as well. Maybe do it up to fourplexes, sixplexes, something like that as a experiment before you tackle some that are 30 and 40 units to see how you would do the rating to make it most effective. Because many of the people who work in the marginal jobs rent, their rents are directly tied to the cost of oil when it goes up. In areas such as ours, natural gas, I don't think has been quite so suffered such fluctuations. But the cannery workers, the people who work in the shops, in the stores, are kind of at the mercy of what the oil does to the landlord. And many landlords have taken the eaten the bill for a long time, but it just gets passed on to the average guy. So if you can see your way to perhaps explore how that could be administered, Alaska Housing, I think, has done a good job. The Cooperative Extension Service with their training is a good resource. So if you would consider that in the future. So thank you for coming, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great, thank you. Any questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Senator.
You know, one of the discussion points that we had when we initially put the energy efficiency program together was that we could see direct benefit to individuals. How can we as a state justify it toward businesses, which are duplexes, and that was one of the stumbling blocks when we put this program together and discussing it with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I know it's going to save money, but at the same time, how is that being passed on to the individuals versus some of that being passed on to the people that are running the businesses?
Certainly would be hard. You'd have to put some thinking into that as to what rents were at a certain time when the work was done, and if taxes, you know, property taxes didn't go up, the mortgages are pretty well fixed for the life of the loan. Energy costs are the one unit that, you know, is at the mercy of the market. I know some apartments have gone to individual heaters in each of the units and let the tenants pay for the oil. And so, you know, that just is kind of a double whammy when you have single-pane windows, marginal insulation, and then, you know, instead of having to pay it through the rent, they have to pay it to the oil company. So, you know, it certainly takes some thinking, but I think it's a practical way to do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brody. And next up, we have Teresa Peterson, followed by Roland Ross.
Good evening. My name is Teresa Peterson. I'm a member of a commercial fishing family here in Kodiak, and I also work as the Kodiak Outreach Coordinator for Alaska Marine Conservation Council, which is a community-based organization made up largely of fishermen, subsistence harvesters, and coastal Alaskans who rely directly and indirectly upon the oceans. And I really want to thank you all for coming here today. This is a tremendous outreach effort on your parts, and I hope it proves to be worthwhile. As you've no doubt heard and seen during your visit here in Kodiak, we really have it going on here. With those wind turbines up on pillar, to me, to see those turbines spinning on a mountain on a remote island in the North Pacific clearly illustrates a vision for future energy in Alaska. And I think if we can do it here, it can be done in many areas. And I look forward as leaders for you to keep networking and trying to find such solutions. Also in Kodiak, we have a number of individuals and fishermen taking enormous initiatives to reduce their energy usage. Fishermen are re-outfitting their boats with more fuel-efficient engines. A number of us were just running at lower RPMs to increase our energy or to decrease our fuel consumption. And then I've just returned from a summer set net fishing down at the south end of Kodiak Island, and many, many of the camps have solar panels and wind generators and water turbines and many just small-scale renewable energy sources that really, really serve to reduce your energy usage when you're out there. And when you have to haul it up the beach on your shoulder, you really have a tendency to try to reduce. So I think it's kind of funny. Who'd have thought Kodiak would be so progressive? But we are, and I think we're kind of are a hands-on community like you find throughout Alaska. And so as state representatives, we need you to continue to enact legislation to fund initiatives that will dramatically increase energy efficiency and the production of renewable energy. And this will then result in less dependence on fossil fuels and help to protect the ocean from the acidifying, ocean-depleting, and climate-altering impacts of uncontrolled fossil fuel emissions. And as a resource-dependent community, with the ongoing science that we're finding behind ocean acidification, I think the time to act is now. And I would like us as a state to start to forego new industrial developments that pose substantial risks to this resource base we depend on, and this would include the proposed lease sales in Bristol Bay. The area is far too rich, with the largest salmon run in the world, crab fisheries, halibut fisheries, cod, ground fish. These will provide sustainable income for the economy of Alaska for years and years to come. And I strongly believe it's too great a risk to explore oil and gas development in that region. And so with that, I want to say thank you very much for coming, and we'll look forward to following your lead as leaders in the Alaskan community to continually search for practical renewable energy usage. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Roland, I'm going to ask you to hold on a second. I've got Judy Fulp and then Roland Ross. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm on the Borough Assembly, so sometimes I sit up there, but I'm coming to speak as a citizen of Alaska. I grew up here in Kodiak and Seward, Alaska. And I really, really appreciate you coming to Kodiak. I appreciate the energy money you put in. I think it was $300 million over 3 years into the energy program. And personally, I benefited. My home under the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, we got $7,000 in. Really made our home a lot more energy efficient, got a new furnace, and it does help so much. And what I think is, in Alaska, we're going to have to take one house at a time, one building at a time. I mean, the new buildings are going to be built to standard codes for energy efficiency, but the rest of us are going to be in the older buildings. And I think besides oil development, fishing, and tourism, this is the most important thing we can do as a state. So I really appreciate it. And my husband wasn't able to come tonight. He's got pneumonia. So he wanted his global warming and energy efficiency and things top of his list of importance in his mind. And he just wanted me to tell you that as a state, he thinks we're positioned for the future because we have all this coastline with the wave action, the wind action that no other state has. So I just wanted to say thank you for coming.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Roland Ross, followed by Switgard Disterlo.
Hi, my name is Roland Ruiz. I'm a small business owner. I've got an air taxi here in Kodiak. So we, like the commercial fishing fleet, felt the 2008 run-up in fuel prices. We're a fuel-sensitive business. And I listened to Rich Seifert when he came to Kodiak last winter. He was talking about energy-efficient homes, which is a great idea. And he mentioned something else that I thought was another great idea, and I'm a little reluctant to recommend it, but it's to buy into the North Pole refinery, that the state should use permanent fund money or oil royalty and buy into the North Pole refinery. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, the Matanuska Dairy. What would we do as a part owner in refineries? We'd be the junior partner, and we'd get run all over the street or whatever the owner would do, and we might get milked in the deal. But it still sounds like it was worth a risk. So I'm wondering if this is an idea that's been explored in your committee.
We've had presentations on it. It is something that I think there's many different opinions on. It's something we'll discuss.
Yeah, it seemed like a possibility. And something else I thought we could get out of it as a state is we get to look at their books. What do you think? We got jerked all over the place with the oil price run up. But, you know, of course, oil is the profit deal for Alaska, too, so we got the benefit on that side. But I thought it might be worth it if we could look at their books and find out just how straight they were.
Thank you, Roland.
Thank you.
Next up, Switgard Disterlo, followed by Stosh Anderson.
Good evening. My name is Vitka Dustalo. I want to thank you for giving the public an opportunity to speak here. I'm a fishery scientist, and I have recently become interested in ocean acidification and am starting some research on that topic. I'm also an educator and working on with the Kodiak School District on getting our young people more into the sciences and more aware of what is coming up for them with respect to ocean acidification and climate change. My thoughts on this topic are that ocean acidification has come to us because of the increase of CO2 in the atmosphere, and the increase of CO2 in the atmosphere has come upon us through the extensive use of fossil fuels. Now, if we look worldwide at this problem, we can make a comparison of per capita use or per capita production of CO2, And when you compare an American to any other industrialized nation, we in America use a much larger proportion of fossil fuels than other industrialized nations do. I was just in Germany this summer, and in Bremerhaven they just built a climate change museum, and there's a wonderful exhibit in there where they compare the production of CO2 per capita, and the U.S. is way up there in comparison to other countries that have the same standard of living. Now, why is that the case? And I think that's where we really need to start with our energy policies, is no waste of energy. It's conserving energy where we can, but it doesn't mean a lower standard of living. I'm a little nervous, I'm sorry. My other thought on this subject is that in Alaska we have a lot of scattered small communities, and we have a problem with transportation, with getting things to these communities and with getting energy to these communities. So what we need as a solution for energy production are localized projects that are good for one small project, for one small community. So we need to stop looking at huge projects that solve everything in one shot. We need to start looking at a million little projects that can do a little bit, can heat a few houses, or solar energy can be used to just run one entity of electricity, or a street light or something like that. So many, many projects that use less of our fossil fuels. We need to stop using fossil fuels that haven't been used yet. What I mean by that is the whole problem of the increased CO2 in the atmosphere comes from us digging up fossil fuels that have been deposited for a long, long time by nature, and we're not meant to be in the cycle. We disrupted the cycle of life by bringing up these fossil fuels. Now, if we use something like biofuels, that is not a new addition to the CO2 in the cycle. It's not going to do anything in the short term to reduce CO2, but it's going to, in the long term, not increase the budget of CO2 in our world. So what I mean to say is that we need to get away from fossil fuels that we dig up anew, from oil, from coal, and anything that we use for the first time. And there's a newer technology that actually takes old plastic and turns it into diesel fuel. And we need to look worldwide for those kinds of technical solutions and apply them in our state. If we have small communities that actually here in Alaska always have a garbage problem as well, because you transport stuff here, and then you end up with all the packaging, then you don't know what to do with that. You have to pay for transportation to get it away again. Now, if we can bring that technology in to these small communities and turn old plastic back into diesel fuels, we'd have two problems solved in one hit there. And that technology is out there.
Great. Thank you for your
That's
testimony.
That's all I have.
Thank you. Next up, we have Stosh Anderson, followed by Pat Holmes.
Good evening. Welcome to Kodiak. My name is Stosh Anderson. I'm a commercial fisherman. I'm speaking for myself, but I'm also on the board of directors of KEA. the state is putting together its energy plan. I think it's very important that the energy plan is not just a statewide energy plan, but it's components of all of the local communities and the needs and the specific needs of those communities. As large as our state is and as varied of places as you gentlemen and lady came from or come from, the plan needs to be very flexible, and the plan needs to really address the needs of the respective communities. And this plan ultimately will guide funding, and I think that's what your job is to allocate the funding, and our job is to ask for it. With regard to funding, I'd like to reiterate what Darren Scott said, is I think a performance-based funding is an excellent way to make sure that the state isn't funding boondoggles and basically expands on what the state is doing for individual residences that get reimbursed for increasing their Energy Star rating for their homes. It's performance-based funding. We, Kodiak, is a non-grid utility, which the majority of the utilities in the state are non-grid utilities. And when we think about renewables that we're trying to add to our systems to for cost control, elimination of use of hydrocarbons, it's very capital intensive. Most of the renewables that we have access to are not a constant power output. They're here now, we utilize the energy, but they don't really contribute any capacity to our utility system. So if we're going to expand this, the capital side of it is, you know, your expenditures are about 225% of what you would need if you were just using straight hydrocarbon-based generation capacity or usage, because you have to have 100% backup, and then you have to allow for failures. So you have to, it takes a lot of money to put the system in. As you saw today with the three wind turbines, which are very symbolic to what this community is doing, but the hydroelectric facility is really the backbone of the system. We still have to have 100-125% of diesel generation capability in town for power lines go down or whatever. So it's a very good project, and it's achieving our goal of our utility of 95% of non-fossil fuel generation by the year 2020, and we're going to obtain that. It's going to be difficult, but it's going to be very expensive. As you've heard from other folks, different technologies are going to be more prevalent in our communities. We're going to do a lot more space heating with electricity, and electric vehicles are very appropriate for many of our communities. In this community, from end to end, we've got 50 miles. Even at today's technology, electric vehicles can be very useful. Roland Ruiz, who spoke earlier, has two electric vehicles in his family. I perceive that with the battery technology going to be improved, that we're going to have more and more electric vehicles in this state. And what that means is the utilities for both space heating and electric vehicles are going to have an increased demand. And that demand means we're going to have capital investment of 225% for every kilowatt that these people are adding to the system. I think it's very appropriate that they add, but we're going to need a lot of help in financing and the rules and regulations and how we can achieve those goals. The shelf that this state has so richly been blessed with is the richest shelf in the world. I mean, we have ocean resources that are supporting our communities and have supported the communities since day one when the first Russians showed up over here. We need to honestly address what's going to happen with ocean acidification. It's a reality. It's not just a pipe dream. It's going to cripple our communities if we don't consistently work at reducing our input on the carbon side, but also finding ways to reduce the ocean acidification after it's in the water. These technologies are not there today, but they're going to be developed as time goes on. And I sure appreciate you coming to Kodiak. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Question by Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Sasha. I appreciate all you've said and done, and I know you've served on that KEA board for a good number of years, and I'm just really proud to show these folks what you have gone ahead and taken a chance on doing, and it's pretty remarkable. But I think we also know in the end that the hydro is going to still be cheaper than the electricity we're generating from wind. I think almost half as costly. So, and I know you've thought about this, but can you talk briefly about the expansion of the Terror Lake project, expansion of the hydro potential in Kodiak, which seems to me to be almost more exciting than the wind project?
Thank you, Gary. As I said, the hydro facility is the backbone of our utility. There are other water sources available that could feed the watershed to Terror Lake. Again, very capital intensive investments to bore tunnels through mountains. You have refuge problems. We've got a lot of water that we're sending down Terror River, which is appropriate, but there's possibly ways to modify that to be more advantageous so we can save that water. Currently, our average peak loads are around 25 megawatts, 23 to 25 megawatts. Terror Lake currently can put out 20 megawatts. So that means whenever the processors are in full capacity, we have to run diesel generation. The wind plants can be on and blowing, but they don't add any capacity to the system. They're adding energy, so we're saving water that we can use later. But to make the system work ultimately and to reduce the carbon footprint, we're going to have to put another turbine in Terror Lake, which wouldn't make sense because there's not enough water to run the three turbines year-round if we weren't having renewables contributing to the system so we can use Terror Lake as a long-term energy storage device. Again, a third turbine's $15 million. A lot of money, a lot of capital for a small community to support. We're looking at four or five different small projects. Management is going to be presenting to the board probably in the January-February timeframe. We've got the permits available to expand the wind farm, but until we have some experience to make sure that it can integrate with our system, it's not prudent to spend that money currently. If we can ever harvest any tidal energy, Terror Lake will be the key to that, because that will be the storage device, because the tides are going to be sick. You know, everyone knows tides twice a day. So the periods of time when the tides aren't running, that's when Terror Lake will pick up the slack. So Terror Lake is the key. And federally, I'm not quite sure how the state deals with it, but hydro projects are not considered renewable, especially new ones. But it would really help us if we could finance using renewable energy funding to add to Terror Lake, because it's a non-hydrocarbon entity.
We actually passed a resolution urging the federal government to classify Alaskan hydro as renewable, but we'll see where that goes.
I sure appreciate that.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Pat Holmes, followed by Joanne Goyne.
Good evening, and thanks very much for coming to town. I have to agree with all of the speakers so far. I think they've given some excellent ideas, so I'll perhaps give you a recap on some things I think are important. But I think you're coming to town. I'd like you to think back on the days right after statehood when the Bush caucus kind of controlled the state, and a couple of our crusty old senators and reps, maybe Eddie Naughton, Carl Moses, and Alvin Osterbeck, and possibly even Jay Hammond getting together and having a brew down at the saloon there in Juneau, and talking about what should we do this first week of the legislature. And the thought of spend January, the first week in January in my village or my town to see what people like. And so in your respect, you're coming here in August, that's a good, or September, it's a nice thing to do. But a whole lot different out in Perryville or Atka or Quinnahog in January. And I'd like you to reflect in your statewide approach to not forget the bush, because that's a very integral part of our nation, of our state and our nation as far as resource production. And the folks that live there are darn special. I'd like to reiterate the thought on the renewable energy fund that Darren Scott mentioned, the home energy retrofit and rebate that Mrs. Folt was mentioning. I know that the governor would like to move forward and feels that perhaps at least one news release I heard that enough had been spent on individual homes. But here in Kodiak, it took me 7 months to be able to get an audit, and I'm working on it like mad, but I don't know if I'm going to get it done. But I'd say probably half of the town or more hasn't been able to get an audit. So if those funds are cut off, and then particularly when you get out to the villages, it's even more difficult. How do you get somebody to do an energy audit if you live in Carlick or Occiok or Perryville? Pretty darn hard. I think that the public building retrofits, particularly Mayor Selby's comments on our school, it's 40 years old, and a good portion of it is just cinder block. And it really will need some help in the remodel and rebuilding of that. And I think the power equalization program for villages on electrical power, I was privileged in I worked for the Fish and Game for many years, and particularly out in the Aleutians and on the peninsula. And last time I was in Atka, probably about 10 years ago, and I went to stay the night at my friend's house, and they had 25 and 40-watt bulbs in their house because they couldn't afford electricity. They were paying like 45 cents a kilowatt hour before the cost of fuel went up. And it's just incredible what people have to pay in the rural areas. And here in town, we have a lot of wonderful things. We've got our new generating plants on top of the hill. We've got Terre Lake, the best decision our town ever made. And a lot of things that are advantageous, but I think you have a tough task. How do you address the whole state? How do you balance the rural and the urban areas to provide some equity? And how do you save people so that they can continue to stay and try to maintain the lifestyle that they've had? And I guess in closing, I'd like you to imagine the same four crusty old devils sitting down and having another brew at the end of the session, and talking about how fuel barges come into some towns once a month, and yet you see the price of gas and fuel oil go up four times in a week. And then the price of oil doesn't drop until the spot market does, but it's on that barge that comes in the next month. So there's also a lot of, while I think that capitalism is a great thing, I surely wish I hadn't got rid of my Exxon Valdez stock when they had the little thing bump on the rocks, because I think I'd probably have a much more secure retirement if I'd kept the money in the oil biz. But anyway, thank you so much for coming to our community, and I wish you well in the rest of your journey, and certainly applaud you, and I applaud the legislature on the override on the former governor's veto on the energy. I thought that was a much ado about nothing, because all the communities that have organized boroughs all go by the Uniform Building Code, and the Unified Building Code changes nationally, changes all over the state, so what's the problem? And some places, if you're talking about Teller, who's going to go there to see what happens anyway? So thank you so much for doing what you're trying to do.
Thank you, Pat. Next up, we have Joanne Goyne, followed by Lori Murdoch.
Hello, my name is Joanne Goyne, and I think I'd like to address some of the questions that were raised. And one, when Bob Brody was up here, I don't see him here now, but was your question regarding how you had talked before about addressing the energy efficiency to apartment complexes and to commercial buildings. And it seems like the energy program with Alaska Housing has been quite successful. And I'm a retired CPM, and it's like been 20 years ago since the state recruited me to go to Alaska Housing. And then I got recruited to go over to Russia as an advisor in housing and urban management. And I'm dating myself way back now with a suggestion that happened during the 1970s, early in my career, in running lots of property in California. When that Proposition 13 came out, you know, for to reduce taxes, and how are you going to get that rebate to go back into an apartment dweller? Was similar to your question. How are you going to get the energy rebate, maybe to go back into the apartment dweller? And I was young. I was very young. I was captured by the gypsies at that time. That's how young I was. But one of the things that was very successful was went to the professional organizations that manage the property, and we have them here in Alaska. We have a strong BOMA. We have a strong IRM, and use their expertise to go back in and say, you know, partner with this, and if we do help reduce and make our structures energy efficient, that the rebate go back to the tenants. The associations actually became so strong because they wanted to benefit from the tax rebate, which, like Waisira, I'm sure they want to benefit from improving their properties. They collectively even came up, let capitalism work, and had you know, pledges and sign and let tenants know. Now you're dealing with, in commercial structure, you're obviously dealing with proprietary information, and people don't want to know how much I'm going to give back to you or what I'm going to do for my square meters, square feet. But it's a possibility, and I've seen it work successfully, so I just thought I might pass that on to you as a possible method to use some of the resources at hand and some of the people that live in the communities that have already participated in such events.
Thank you, Joanne. Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Lori Murdoch, and that's the last name I have on the list. If there's anyone else that wants to testify, if you could come up and sign our sheet. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi. I'm the fix-it man's wife. but I have three topics that nobody's really talked about at all, and I understand I have a philosophy on life, and my new philosophy is burn calories, not fossils. And I ride my bicycle to work 3 days a week. I work for the Kodiak Senior Center, and thank you very much for all the wonderful things you do to keep us running. But I do ride my bicycle 3 miles to work and 3 miles home. 3 times a week is my goal. And our roads here in Kodiak, as good as they try to keep them, are not very bicycle friendly, and people like myself are scared to death to ride on the road. So if you have any pull in that neighborhood, please, by all means, encouraging people to not drive their cars and ride their bikes or take mass transit, which at one point we did have a transit system in Kodiak. We have one now, but it doesn't really help the people that work an 8-to-5 job. You can catch it at 7 o'clock in the morning at Safeway. And if you're going at 7 o'clock in the morning or you're dressed at 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm not quite dressed at that point, it works for you. But anytime anybody else that would go to work at a normal 8 o'clock doesn't work. So I encourage you, I know it may not have anything to do with this committee, but mass transit in this town, I believe at this point in time, would work. I also have... Every time I see those wind turbines up on the hill, it gives me the chills. I'm just very happy. I would like to have one of those electric cars that Stosh was talking about, because I think it would be a great way to get back and forth in this little town. I am a member of the Solid Waste Advisory Board for the Kodiak Island Borough, and I'm not here in that capacity, but I am here to encourage coastal communities in Alaska to begin some sort of recycling and reuse programs. And I think if we've talked about on the advisory board that instituting some kind of coastal recycling plan would be a really great idea. And I'm directing it to you. I'm probably going to get chewed out for bringing it up, but I do encourage you to look at recycling as a way of reducing our emissions and reducing the waste that we're putting into landfills. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Do we have any other names, Michelle? No? Okay. Well, I just want to thank everyone again for coming out and testifying.
We've taken the opportunity to go out to Fairbanks, to Ruby, to Tanana. We'll be in Haines. We'll be in Dillingham. We've been to Kenai. And it's a great opportunity for us to get out and hear from the people in the communities. And we've gotten some wonderful ideas from you. We'll take all those back and process them. And if you have other ideas or if you know anyone that has ideas and they'd like to send them in to us, you can please send them to myself or Senator McGuire. And we'll definitely incorporate those ideas into the planning process. And again, I want to thank Senator Stevens for inviting us. You have virtually half the Senate here, and we've only got 20 members, actually 19, because there's someone that's standing down right now. So I want to thank you again for coming out. And with that, we'll be in Kodiak, just, you know, for tonight. We're headed out to Uzinki tomorrow, and we look forward to having seeing some more, getting a tour of the small hydro facility out there, and also someone who's turning I think it's vegetable oil into diesel fuel. So that should be very interesting. But again, thank you for your hospitality, and with that, meeting's adjourned at 6:55.